The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This program is sponsored by North Valley Church of Christ.
There's a message true and glad for the sinful and the sad.
Ring it out.
Ring it out, ring it out, ring it out. It will give them courage new. It will help them to be true.
Ring it out.
Ring it out, ring it out, ring it out.
Ring out.
Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back to another episode of Redeeming the Time. I'm your host, Chris Macy, and I am the minister here with the North Valley Church of Christ, Cave Creek, Arizona. All right. Well, it is April the 9th, 2024. And if somebody's listening to this far, far in the future, I hope and I pray we have come to our senses and have gone back to the natural order of things. That is, we recognize there are men and there are women. There are females and there are males, and there is a difference between them. You know, this morning, I was perusing X, you know, Twitter, and I came across a video of a court hearing in Alaska. Riley Gaines was there. I guess she was there as part of the lawsuit. I don't know what it was. But a question came from some assemblyman, or a prosecutor, I don't know who, but you could tell he was effeminate, and he asked, is there any studies that show trans women, which are men, trans women, men, are strong, I'm paraphrasing, but are stronger than women? And I just thought, and my first thought is, that guy's an idiot. But Riley Gaines, to her great credit, she kept her composure, doesn't lash out about the stupidity of the question, and pointed out a great, great point, saying that the very point of that little meeting that they were having there proved there is a distinction, because they're only talking about men pretending to be women coming into women's sports. They are never talking about women pretending to be men going into men's sports, because it doesn't work. It doesn't happen. They don't get anywhere. They get clobbered. It's only the other way around, because the men are dominating women's sports. And so that, and then she goes on to show actual evidence where these trans women, which are men, are dominating the sports of women. It is happening. So that is an issue, right? And we're even finding, unfortunately, that issue coming into Christendom. Now, I want to define what I mean. Whenever I say Christendom, I mean any organizations that claim to be Christian. And just because they claim to be Christian does not mean they actually hold to the tenets found within the Bible. The standard that I live by is God's Word. Now, I am sure if you ask them, they will say the standard they live by is God's Word too. But just like you, Jesus says, you and even John the Baptizer says, you can tell a person by the fruit they bear. You know, that's what you look at. Are they really producing the fruit of God's Word? Within Christendom, you even have groups now, and this is like the not just a small faction, it's a large push, and it's a large faction within Christendom that women can hold the roles of elders, can hold the role of a preacher, and leaders in the church. And I know that right now out there, there may be some of you shaking your head, reaching to turn off that radio program because that you don't trust me on this, or you don't believe me on this, that that men are the leaders and not the women. But let me help you in that showing in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 proves this. And 1 Corinthians chapter 11 is the proof text that everyone should turn to about the distinction between men and women. Yes, there is Romans chapter 1 as well, but I think this is a better one to look at. Unfortunately, like with many things out there, since there are so many differing teachings on this passage, on what it means and how to interpret it, it has created confusion. So my goal here is to simply show you what the text says, keeping it within its context. I may give you a few other comments on this, but ultimately I just want to show what Paul is saying to the Corinthians, and that will help us tremendously. If I receive some questions or feedback or even pushback from folks out there, or in mail or in contacting me, which I encourage you to do, please, I want to hear your thoughts, then I will follow up with more in-depth look at these sections to help us in our understanding of finding the truth. Now, whenever we look at this passage, especially on a lot of passages in 1 Corinthians, the idea of culture and the teaching of culture comes up quite a bit. So let me give a bit of an excursus on this. So you know, I'm going to be using a lot of Guy Orbison Jr.'s notes from the Workshop in the Word, Working in the Word. I might use Truth for Today commentary a little bit here and there. But mainly I'll be looking at these things, and I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. I just want to know what the truth is, and I think Guy Orbison does a good job with this text. So why reinvent it? I'm not trying to reinvent anything. I just want to know what is the truth. So let's look at the culture, and then I want to read 1 Corinthians 11, 2 through 16, and then we'll work through that passage as long as we got enough time. In this passage, 1 Corinthians 11, 2 through 16, the wearing and not wearing of coverings has to do with the distinction between men and women. To some folks, Paul is saying you should not wear a covering when you're in the worship assembly. So the question is, why? Well, his reason is because you're a man. To others, Paul says, you have to wear a covering. So we ask, why? And Paul is saying here, because you're a woman. Paul is saying that for a man to wear a covering would not, or would be, to appear in the inappropriate dress and role of a woman. And for a woman not to wear a covering would be to appear as a man. So the wearing or the not wearing of a covering in the worship assembly depended on whether you are in the role of authority or in the role of subordination. Now, who determined this? Who determined it? Obviously, in our society, such is not true, okay? Why was it true when Paul wrote this? And should it be true today for you and me? The answer to these questions necessarily leads us to a consideration of the idea of culture. It would be a mistake for us to assume that the New Testament writers and Paul here in 1 Corinthians 11 were culturally naive individuals who merely ignored all social issues. On the other hand, though, to dismiss much of the teaching as simply being, oh, culturally conditioned, it doesn't apply to us, that goes too far. So, what I mean by this is, while we don't want to bind cultural aspects of the New Testament teachings upon every generation, we also want to be careful as to what we consider to be culturally conditioned. Okay, a couple of major categories of culture elements that may be distinguished are those things that belong to. It's what we call social structure. This is, what I'm about ready to say here, is important in all aspects of life. And we don't teach this to our children. And I think I'm starting to believe this is by design of some people who want to control us. You may be thinking I'm getting conspiratorial, but trust me on this. there is a push out there to control us, and the best way to control people is through information, and you control that information by what people learn and how they're taught. So what I'm about ready to teach you here is something they don't teach children today. It is social structure and social expression. There are things that belong to social structure, and there are those matters of social expression. So let me tell you what these things are. Social structure would include such principles as government, marriage, and the roles of men and women. These are God-given aspects of all human existence. No matter where you go in this earth, there is a social structure of government. You may be thinking, well, what about the anarchy happening in Haiti? Well, yeah, the government fell apart, but guess what? All those little segments that are now appearing in there, they're creating their own structure. You got to follow that gang or that group or whatever it might be. And out of those things come different structures. It's not great structure, but it is structure. We'll look at more of that in a second. But all cultures have that. Then you have social expression. And this is concerned with the way these structures are expressed, kind of like I was talking about a second ago, is the way these structures are expressed or carried out in a given society. All cultures have a form of government, structure. They do. They're expressed differently. Democracy, dictatorship, and you can put all kinds of things under that. Monarchy, you know, communism, socialism. All cultures have some form of marriage structure. But the rituals and the ceremonies, that's the expression, differ, don't they? See? You see the difference? Structure, expression. So like that, the way cultures express the distinction between the roles of men and women differ. Social expression may also be called the customs of a particular culture. Now, problems arise when we fail to properly distinguish between social structure and social expression. In some cases, social expression is mistaken for social structure, and in others, social structure is misconstrued as expression. This confusion has led some folks to bind, for example, in the church, some people have bind the holy kiss and foot washing on every generation. There are people that I know that believe that you ought to give the holy kiss. Remember, you know, that's from Romans chapter 16:16. Because I'm really bad about saying things exactly properly. Romans 16, verse 16, greet one another with a holy kiss. All the churches of Christ greet you. Okay, so it sounds like he's telling us that we ought to greet everyone with a holy kiss. But when you look at the Greek here, or in that passage, the command is to greet. The expression of how you do that differs by culture. Back then, they did it with a holy kiss. I'm not kissing anybody that comes into this building. I'm not going to do it. I'll kiss my wife, but I don't kiss anyone else. I'm not going to do it. I will give you the holy hug or the holy handshake. For me, it's a holy handshake. I'm not into the holy hug. I'm not a hugger. Some people are. They give the holy hug. So that's the expression. Okay, the structure is greeting. We greet people. Every culture has a greeting. Every culture's expression on that greeting may differ, okay? So you get that. You get the foot washing. We don't foot wash today. Some people think we ought to. Why? That's not the way we express that. It's different. We're not going to get into that, though, but I want to move on because of time. So these things are, and I'm talking about, our social expressions, not structure, the foot washing and the kissing. Others, though, other groups have loosened the New Testament obligation of the role of women in regard to leadership in the worship assembly, which we talked about in the opening of this program. These are matters of social structure, 1 Corinthians 14:34. The head covering that we're going to be looking at here in 1 Corinthians 11 is a matter of dress style, and the way differing people dress falls into the realm of social expression. What is important in any society is maintaining the distinctions between men and women. Let me say that again. What is important in any society is maintaining the distinctions between men and women, which is a matter of structure, not expression. Structure. And the argument that many people are making in our society today is, oh, it's expression. I express myself as a woman, so I'm going to dress like a woman. I'm going to act like a woman. I'm going to bathe with women. I'm going to play in women basketball and football and whatever. And it's not working. It's not. It does, because that's not expression. You're changing structure, and you can't do that. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. And that's the big fight today. And that's why we're having problems. So that's a whole nother study again. But I want us to stay here in chapter 11. Hopefully I get through the whole thing. So let's start by reading. We'll start by reading 1 Corinthians 11, verse 2. I'm not starting with verse 1 because I believe that belonged with the previous chapter. Verse 2. Paul writes, "Now I praise you because you remember me in everything and hold firmly to the traditions just as I deliver them to you." Traditions, that word there, those things that are handed on. The teachings passed on by Paul, the Corinthians are praised by him, likely for their keeping with what he taught about worship. But there are new issues that have been raised that need instruction. Now, I believe Paul, beginning in chapter 11, verse 2, is talking about the worship assembly. We will see that in this chapter, chapter 12 and 13 and 14. And that's another study, but that's what he's talking about. If you don't agree with that, let me know, and we'll get more into that. But he's talking about the worship assembly. And he's praising them because they are doing some aspects correct, but now he's going to correct some things they're doing wrong. So he wants to start with a positive. Praise you for the things you're doing. However, there are some things you need to understand. So verse 3. "But I want you to understand." Now he's writing to the Corinthians about the worship assembly. "I want you to understand that Christ is the head of every man, and the man is the head of a woman, and God is the head of Christ." This is a statement of Paul's point. What he wants the Corinthians and us to understand, that is to know. So the theme of the passage, this is important, the theme of this passage is not head coverings. It's not. The theme is the differing roles of males and females before God and before society. The abuse of the head covering relates to the theme. Verse 4 and 5. "Every man who has something on his head while praying or prophesying disgraces his head. But every woman who has her head uncovered while praying or prophesying disgraces her head. For she is one and the same as the woman whose head is shaved." The words for covering, we need to do a study on that, but we'll just quickly, some people say veil. This is not the Greek term for veil. It's not even used in this passage. That is a covering of the face. Paul uses it in 2 Corinthians 3:13 for the veil over hearts and over Moses, but not here. It's not found. The word covering, it's found here, but that's down in verse 15. It's referring to a woman's hair as a covering. Head covering, verse 5, used here, it means down from or down upon to hide or conceal. The emphasis of the term may be placed on the concept of concealing, okay? Now, the praying and prophesying, there's all kinds of different takes on this that people have, but I think it's preferable to see these, praying and prophesying, as a general reference to the worship assembly. In other words, Paul is saying, when you come to the worship assembly, the men should be uncovered and the women covered. My line of reasoning, Guy Orbison's line of reasoning, includes 4 points. First, context indicates the worship assembly is being considered. From here in chapter 11, verse 2, all the way through chapter 14, where three problems of assembly are being considered. Women appearing in worship as men, with uncovered heads. Improper use of the Lord's Supper when assembled. And then the prideful use of spiritual gifts in the assembly. Number two, the very nature of prophesying implies its use when the congregation is assembled. Over in chapter 14, one who prophesies edifies the church. That's what he's talking about. The fact that head covering is discussed indicates a public and not private impropriety. This is not private. I mean, why would it be a problem if it was private? This is a public problem. And then number four, if the term means verbalizing prayer and preaching, then women are required to wear a covering only when doing so, and men and women are not to be covered when actively involved. Remember, this is the assembly, so we have to take into consideration 1 Corinthians 14:34, 1 Timothy 2:11. Okay, the whole Bible has to be considered, and so we don't have confusion. So it's not talking about women getting up and leading a prayer or preaching, and they can only do it while covered. That's not what he's saying. The problem at Corinth is this. The women were showing up at the worship assembly without the customary head covering worn by Corinthian women in public places. That's what's going on. There, did I read verse 6? I have not. Let's read verse 6. For if a woman does not cover her head, let her also have her hair cut off. But if it is disgraceful for a woman to have her hair cut off or her head shaved, let her cover her head. So that phrase, one and the same with her whose head is shaved, that statement and that similar expression, hair cut off, refer to the hairstyle of a man and not a woman. If her hair is cut short or shaved, she is without the natural distinction, verses 14 and 15, of her womanhood. She would look like a man. So Paul seems to say here in verse 6, if women are going to appear in public as men without a covering, then they might as well cut off their hair to look like a man. Since the women would not do this disgraceful thing, then they ought to recognize the shame in removing the covering. Now, we got to keep moving because we're at 22 minutes, so we can't get into this too much. Verse 7. For a man ought not to have his head covered, since he is the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of man. Man is the image of God, and his role of authority, a term not repeated in describing women who are not in a position of authority. Glory is what brings honor. Now look at verses 8 and 9. For man does not originate from women, but women from man. For indeed, man was not created for the woman's sake, but women for the man's sake. What is important here is not order of creation, but origin and purpose of woman's creation. By the way God brought about creation, he established the roles of authority and subordination for men and women. We've got time. Verse 10, this is a difficult passage, but we're going to do our best to get through it quick. Therefore, the woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head because of the angels. Okay, symbol of authority. This is a difficult passage for some folks. But remember, we got to keep things in context. It has to point to the covering. Don't go to let anyone confuse you by taking you to Daniel or Revelation or something weird like that. It's not that. It has to, the symbol of authority for the woman is the head covering. It points out her position. Now, Paul says it's because of the angels. So there's a couple of popular explanations, and I'll get those quickly to you. One, people say these are evil angels, such as those supposedly mentioned in Genesis 6:1, who lusted after women. But a careful study of Genesis 6 reveals that sons of God and daughters of man, that's a contrast between the descendants of Seth and Cain, not angels. And we can look at that some other time. Another popular opinion on because of the angels is these are good angels who are present at the worship assemblies as spectators. Insubordinate women then would supposedly offend these angels who are custodians of the created order. That lacks any really genuine evidence, in my opinion. I think this has more to do with like what you read in Jude 6, like Jude 6, and angels who did not keep their own domain but abandoned their proper abode. Corinthian women who were discarding the covering and stepping out of their God-given bounds, as did the angels. That's what's happening here in verse 10. Man, verses 11 and down to verse 16, we're not going to read it, but ultimately it's saying that because the covering shows the distinction between men and women in Corinth, Paul is telling them the women need to wear it. He's not saying all women need to wear this everywhere. We know that's not true because of 1 Timothy, where you had the women with braided hair. But in Corinth, they had to. That was their culture. There is a distinction between men and women. There in verse 16, you got the we there is generally thought to refer to the apostles, and that's what it is. But Paul's point is, if anyone rebels against this teaching concerning the roles of men and women, and whatever dress style might exhibit this distinctiveness, then they need to realize they stand in opposition to the apostles and the churches who believe and practice the distinctive authority and subordination roles of men and women. He is not saying every church requires women to wear a head coverings. Again, look at 1 Timothy 2:9 on that. But there is a distinction. And when we remove the distinction, then we are removing the structure that God has given us. Just because we want to express certain things doesn't make it right. There is order to things. Someone has to be in charge. God determined it to be man. That's another study as well, but I hope, and I know this was quick, I only had 27 minutes, but I hope this helped. I hope it gets you thinking. Please let me know your thoughts. Thank you very much, and remember, redeem the time. Make the most of every opportunity. We got the truth. The world needs it. Let us bring it to them with light and salt. Thank you, and God bless.
Ring it out.
Ring it out. Ring it out.
This program was sponsored by North Valley Church of Christ. To hear this program again, go to FamilyValuesRadio1010.com and click on the podcast page and find this program and many others right there on FamilyValuesRadio1010.com.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.